Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the December 1, 2019 session, focusing on Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, Hope for Peace. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Crystal Shepherd.
Well, this is our first episode in December, which also means we are in Advent.
Advent.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's the first Sunday of the Christian year.
Yeah.
So yeah, Happy New Year, everybody.
Yay.
So interestingly, for Advent, Faith Element has been up to some additional things. If you have been by the site lately at faithelement.net, you've noticed there's a banner across the top now that highlights our new Faith Element for Worship resources. And what these are, it's a curated collection of worship planning resources. And it's not just for, as you know, Faith Element, the Bible study curriculum. We have to pick one text per week to focus on, even though the lectionary offers several. But this resource, the worship resource, gives you links to all of the texts for that week, including the one that we focus on for the Bible study materials. And it offers a wide range of ideas for everything from hymns and anthem suggestions, but also responsive readings, often original material there, thoughtful quotations, if you want to put something at the early part of your bulletin for people to ponder, perhaps as the service is beginning, calls to worship, collective prayers, confessions, benediction, and often even some original music that you can use. So for Advent, we are giving this away. So you can go to faithelement.net/worship, or just go to faithelement.net and click on the little button up top, and you'll be able to find all of the materials for Advent, all of them, not just the first Sunday, but all of Advent. It's there. And we'd love for you to try it out. We'd love for you to tell us what you think about it. Now, many of you may not be part of worship planning, but you know somebody who does. You've got a music minister, a pastor, other persons on your staff or your worship team who are part of planning worship each week, and they know how difficult it can be to find good materials, good resources, good music that will really help enrich and pull the theme of worship together for the congregation. So these materials are there. Hopefully they will save your leadership time and also help your worship experiences to be even richer. So give it a try. It's at faithelement.net/worship. Shout out to Warren Howell, who is putting these together. He does a great job. He is a worship geek. So this is right up his alley. I hope that you'll give it a look. And there is a place on the page where you can give us some feedback and let us know what you like, what you might like to see more of. Help us know how to make this a good resource for you. We're really excited to be offering it. Okay, well, we are in Advent. And Crystal, I think you are set up to perhaps get us going on this one.
Sure. Today's scripture from Isaiah is probably one of the most well-known passages of the prophet. It is so well-known that it is inscribed in the United Nations building in New York, reminding the nations to put away their warring madness. Isaiah 2, 1 through 5 would probably have not been quite so popular in his own time. One of the pre-exilic prophets, Isaiah is writing, reminding the people of Israel of their grievous ways and warning them of impending judgment. In fact, the previous chapter is a proclamation of what Isaiah sees through the lens of God. Hear, O heavens, and listen, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. And later he says, your country lies desolate, your cities are burned with fire, in your very presence aliens devour your land. It is desolate as overthrown by foreigners, and daughter Zion is left like a booth in a vineyard, like a shelter in a cucumber field, like a besieged city. Chapter 1 is filled with corruption, rebellion, greed, and utter disregard for the poor, the widow, and the orphan. Today's passage is juxtaposed with chapter 1, where rebellion and corruption reign, and the people have forsaken God's way. Isaiah sees clearly the word of the Lord. In the days to come, the mountain of God will be made the highest. All nations will flock to Zion, to the city of Jerusalem, where they will learn the law, or Torah, and the word of God. The temple will no longer be a place of sacrifice, for as we learn in chapter 1, God is through with the sacrifices that are insincere. No, the central purpose of the temple becomes prophetic. It points to a time when all nations will come to know the ways of God and walk in God's paths. It is likely that the prophet expected this to happen within his lifetime. The high mountain is figurative in that it symbolizes that all people will come to know the will of God. They will learn the ways of God, so much so that there will be universal peace. Instruments of destruction will become implements of providing sustenance and abundance. In essence, Isaiah is asserting that God is the king whose reign is a cosmic one, and that God establishes order by bringing the chaos of the world to an end. This is a theocentric eschatology that puts God at the center of saving the world. Isaiah is sharing this vision during a time of disillusionment, when many would have wondered if God was present or even cared. It is dated to the latter part of his ministry that had been marked with fighting and foreign nations at their heels. There is a longing here for the nations to come to God, for God's justice and mercy, rather than to resort to war and desolation. He is hoping that war will be learned no more, and that all will see that it is not the inevitable end to conflict. It is appropriate that Isaiah's vision is shared this first Sunday of Advent. He is looking to the days to come in hopeful expectation. He is not denying that difficult and even dire times might be at hand, but they will not last forever. We, reading the text from the perspective of later years, can see that the times didn't last. Israel was not exiled forever. Those of us in the Christian faith see that a Savior came in the person of Jesus. Or to paraphrase my favorite gospel, the Gospel of John, the light shone in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. Isaiah even predicts this in a now, not yet kind of way when he says, O house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. That last verse exhorts the Israelites and us all these years later to live in the present as if the age of peace has arrived. Christ came into the world, and Christ will come back again. Christ is present with us even as we anticipate him during Advent. It's both and. Isaiah is saying that things are bad. They may continue to be bad, but there is hope. Because in the days to come, there will be a new thing that will happen. It sounds familiar. Kids separated from their parents at the border. People killed for the color of their skin or who they love. Riots, gun violence, sickness, natural disaster. It reminds me of the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire. In the song, he lists a barrage of horrible things, wars, assassinations, genocide, addiction, violence, pain, all mixed with the good. The chorus echoes, We didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it. Advent cools the heat. It holds the fire line and douses the flames so that they do not consume. Advent comes in the darkest season of the year. The days are shorter and nights longer. The chill creeps into the air and the world lies suspended in snow and ice. Yet we hold out hope that light will return. The days will get longer, the ice will thaw, and warmth will be carried on the breeze. Isaiah prophesies in the darkness, calling forth the light. May we be faithful to this calling. Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Let us cultivate peace and sow love and hope this Advent season and beyond.
Crystal, thank you. I just want to say, I've never thought of We Didn't Start the Fire as an Advent song, and it's just brilliant.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's so perfect. Thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome.
When you were speaking, Crystal, and sharing the stories and Isaiah and studying War No More, Tuesday I officiated a funeral for a friend of mine who was a blues musician here in Starkville. And I learned as I was preparing, meeting with his family and things, that he had been in the Navy. And I knew he had been in the Navy, but, and not during wartime, but this was still somewhere around or give or take the Vietnam era. But he was on a couple of different Navy ships up in Alaska. And I said something about him ever being in conflict. They said, no. And until the son said, well, there was that time a Russian sub got into a certain set of waters and he got to chase it out, you know? And so there was that whatever, but it was so odd because the guy that I knew was such a quiet, peaceful, loving, gentle spirit, except when he got behind the drums and played in blues bands. But just this gentle, humble, loving, generous person. And a lot of his musician friends got together, and at the end of the service, they started jamming a little bit, and they went into Down by the Riverside. And the line they kept doing over and over again is, ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more, ain't gonna study war no more. And I don't know what I'm saying here, but for me, knowing John at this end of life for the last 10 years and having that sung at his funeral and having just heard that he had been in the Navy, his life ended as a life of peace. And I have no idea how this connects, except that it just was in my mind as you were saying that, how wonderful John's life was as his life came to an end.
Crystal, you did a beautiful job of drawing us into this passage, and there's a lot here, right? I mean, there's light and darkness, there's war and peace, there's hope and despair. And it's, you know, I hear, especially in the Christmas season, you know, we find it that we're singing songs about hope, and we're talking about hope and praying and singing, and yet sometimes it feels like that is simply hollow optimism, right? Or naivete at worst. So I guess I'm curious, how is Christian hope different, is it, than a hollow optimism that we might find or participate in?
I think Christian hope is born of struggle, or at least I think that that is an element of it. That the hope exists because it's been, I don't know, there's an element of struggle that goes with it that's different than lighthearted, happy, less hope, cheery hope that has no depth.
Because I don't think that's what we're talking about.
No. I've had a hard time responding. Crystal, you did such a beautiful job. And for me, I just kept sitting here thinking, hope is hard. I mean, when you really, really think about it, like I can hope I find a good parking place, or I can hope I get, you know, I don't know. We can hope for all kinds of things, but this kind of hope that Isaiah is talking about is about survival. And it's about, it's speaking to a people who are worried about their survival. And it's telling them, hang in there, good's coming. And it's just, I think hope has to be stubborn. And I think it's born out of struggle.
Sometimes I wonder, in our individualistic society, in our individualistic culture, and our very individualistic Protestant tradition, where salvation is individual, personal, if hope is not as, I don't want to say not as individualistic, but if we feel like if I lose hope, it's over with. But sometimes maybe hope is communal.
Mm-hmm.
And that yeah. hope of the yeah. community carries us even if the individuals don't have it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I imagine we could all talk about times we leaned on other people for hope.
I remember hearing a pastor in Kentucky, Jim England, talk about believing and hoping for someone who was themselves an ordained minister, but had gone through some horrific, I can't remember circumstances, but I think the death of a loved one, a very unjust, unfair death of a loved one, maybe. Mm-hmm. And the minister was confiding in Jim England and said, I'm not sure if I have hope. I'm not sure what I even believe anymore. And Jim England said, well, then we will hope for you and believe for you until you can believe and hope again on your own. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think, you know, because we all have this, well, I don't have any hope, or, you know, hope, all hope is lost. And sometimes that is true for some of us.
Sure.
But maybe there's a community that is hoping for us when we can't hope for ourselves.
I think you're onto something there, Bert, with mm-hmm. our tendency to put things in individualistic terms, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly it can be. I can be ill in a hospital or have a loved one there and genuinely have hope for myself or for that person. There are lots of places in our lives where we struggle and work to have hope. But I think what you're pointing us to is this call, and we see it in this text, right? That this call is to the nations to stop war and to beat their swords into plowshares. This is a we thing. This is a hope for entire groups, entire nations, entire yeah. peoples. And I wonder sometimes how our own experience could be different if we were a bit more focused on hope for many rather mm. than just hope for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, this text really does paint a picture of, I mean, it's a picture of world peace, essentially. It is everyone's weapons have been turned into tools of nurture. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a sense that in reality, it never happens for any of us until it happens for all of us.
Yeah.
Because all the weapons are gone. And that's the only way that you get there. It really is a picture of it's not there for me until it's there for everybody.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, I'm going to switch paths for a minute. I was really intrigued by the middle part of the passage where it says God will be judge for all nations and will arbitrate among many peoples, between many peoples. And I just think about the conflicts in the world, and everyone here has all their own ideas about how those conflicts need to be resolved. But I wonder how we would change our thinking if we thought about that God were going to decide how those were to come out. If God is the judge over those conflicts, how does that change things? How does that level the scales? I don't know. It's an interesting thought to me. I'm not sure that I have any answers, but it's just such an interesting picture.
One that we don't get to decide.
Right.
That God gets to decide. So that frees us up. If we're not judging, if we're not the ones deciding, then that frees us up for a relationship. And I think when you're talking about, you know, if it's not, none of us get to share in it unless, you know, we all get to. And mm-hmm. so I think there's something to that. If we turn it over to God and God's the one that decides that, then I don't have to make that decision. Mm-hmm. I don't have to do that. So it frees me up to be in relationship with someone just based mm-hmm. on them being another human being rather than any category I would be against.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. If we're going to take it on that kind of fundamental level. And then the community grows bigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, that's what that would be what would happen. And I'm just talking about the in general, our communities would enlarge to have all nations, all peoples in those communities. And it sounds so like Pollyanna-ish, I guess. It's hard to sit in the world that we sit in and live in and move in and be able to hope for that, hope for the enlarging of community, hope for there not being so much conflict and anger and, you know, Facebook fights or whatever, like, you know, like all, even down on the, on probably the pettiest level of warring, you know,
right.
Like, what if, like, we take it to this, like, major thing of, like, all the nations not fighting, but what if we took it down to God is going to decide between the person that I like the least right now in me. Like, God's the judge of that. And so I can just let go of that resentment or that frustration and just accept that person for who they are. Again, easier said than done, but.
So I'd like to, as we have the last few minutes of the podcast here to work with, I'd like to ask each one of us, you know, what gives you hope? What are you hopeful about?
I think for me, when I, two things. One, when I sit in sessions with people and I see God working in their lives and transformation happen, healing happen, I think that gives me hope that the world, that the darkness doesn't win out, because there's a lot of darkness I hear when I sit with clients. And so when I see, like today I heard a lady, this is a new client, and she walked out and she goes, I feel so much better than when I came in here. And it wasn't anything I did. She talked pretty much the entire time, but it was just, that was a beautiful thing to me because I thought, oh, there's hope. And then when I see my kids work out things and learn things for themselves, and that to me gives me hope that, like, maybe they'll, you know, that they're going to make their mark in the world and they're going to do their part to make the world a better place. So I have hope when I hear them with their opinion, their 9 and 12 year old opinions and their ideas and their creativity. That gives me hope.
Yeah, it might sound cheesy. I hope not, but the Bill Gaither song "Because He Lives" has that line, "How sweet to hold a newborn baby." Hmm. And less than 2 weeks ago, I held my first granddaughter. Yay. And there's just, and it was bringing back these flood of memories of holding both of my sons when they were born. And it's just, there's just something about the innocence and the beauty of just newborn life that, you know, like you said, Crystal, it's not all bad. Now, the cynic would say it's going to get worse for her, but that's the best part. It's downhill from there. But there's just that sign of hope, that sign of beauty in a world filled with so much ugliness.
Mm-hmm. For me, mine's pretty similar to Crystal, in that I find it in the students that I work with. As they talk about the things that they are interested in as they train to be ministers in this world and the ways that they talk about doing that. It's creative. It is relevant. It is important. It is faithful. And those things give me hope. It reminds me that I'm not alone, and that there are those who will come behind. And also, absolutely, my kids, they're, you know, they can drive me crazy. But the truth of the matter is, every time they do something they're proud of or they say something that I had no idea they had figured out yet, I am reminded that it is not all, I am not the only one making this thing happen. Because if it were all up to me, a lot of that wouldn't happen. But on a lighter side, the other thing that gives me hope is children's programs in elementary school. Anytime I go to a children's program at elementary school, it does not have to be my children. I just swell with all the hope in the world. So it can be a talent show. It can be a science fair project. It can be a costume contest. It doesn't really matter. It always gives me hope. And I always cry. I never met one that didn't make me cry. So.
I think for me, there are lots of points of hope. One is just young people in general. Mm. I see in so many young people an energy and a passion. Mm. I feel tired often, weary, old. and I see an energy that that things not only can be better, but that they can be part of making it better. There is a power that is in this generation that's coming up. The other thing that gives me hope in these young people is they seem undisturbed for the most part by many of the petty things that we grown-ups get hung up on, whether it's differences in skin color or orientation or wealth levels. Or I mean, there's an ability to accept and love people for who they are that I hope is not something that a lot of these young folks will grow out of, that it truly is a larger part of how they see the world. And then I have hope in just everyday people, going grocery shopping or being at a restaurant, or there are just so many places where people could choose not to be helpful, decent, nice, kind, but they choose to be that way. We were an Italy story. So I recently went to Italy with family, and we were in a restaurant. It was a little farmhouse restaurant. So you had to like drive out in the middle of nowhere to get there. And it was run by a husband and wife who owned the farm, and you literally smelled the cows when you were walking to get inside the place. It was authentic.
Hamburgers.
Oh my goodness, it was so good. So we get in there and we get seated, and we realize, and the owner realizes, that we don't speak a common language. So he spoke German. They were in northern Italy. He spoke German, and of course we speak English. And we were like, oh, how are we going to order, much less know what's available? Because the menu was not in English. So there was a group of young people, I'm saying, you know, in their 20s, at a table next to us. And they noticed. Now, they didn't have to. They could have completely had their evening and made fun of these folks at the other table who, you know, these stupid Americans who never learned another language. And they would have been right. But they chose to get up. Two of them got up and had a big time telling us what was on the menu, along with their opinions about what we should eat. You really must try this. It's so good. And here's how you eat this. We know you've probably never had it before, but blah, blah. And we ended up making a nice evening really special, because these young people didn't have to care about these old Americans sitting over there did. And they were hospitable and kind. And of course, the owner, who they knew, was so relieved that he could just make wonderful food and not worry about the language barrier. But I mean, if you look around, you run into people all the time who would rather be kind than mean, who would rather be helpful than hurtful. And I want to believe, and I have hope to believe, that the majority of the people in the world are like that. Mm. And that if we will recognize each other and see this light, which is so bright among us, rather than focusing on the darkness that is there, what a better world we could make together. And I'll close with this, that while I'm on my soapbox, I think the other marker of Christian hope is that the hope is well beyond us.
Yes.
It doesn't all depend on us. There is a God who has suffered, who has gone through the worst that life can bring, including death, and overcame it. And it is that God that calls us to believe in the light, to believe in the hope that comes from a love that is greater than all this darkness that we have in our world. May we celebrate the beginning of a new Christian year as we ponder this God who is so hopeful in the face of such a rebellious creation. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.